Sorry, we had some problem finding which way to get inside the room. But what I'm going to do, for those of you who aren't familiar with me, one of the things that I do, can I just put this here? I will be recording the lecture, so if you actually have, if you have some, you know, issues you want to raise afterwards, I will send the link to where I have my lectures recorded so the people who want to contact me can do so, okay? I want to thank Nadia for inviting me to participate in this session for the Research Committee 23. And what I want to talk about today is a topic that's been very much occupying my mind for, I would say, for close to 10 years now. And it has to do with looking at the long-term horizons for humanity and the kinds of normative horizons in particular that we might be entering into. And this goes beyond the sorts of crises and chaoses and things like this that we're talking about at this conference here, but looking in the longer term. Because there is a lot of loosening up of our intuitions about what it means to be human, the significance of being human, and how one might project that into the future. And so what I want to do in the brief time that I've got here is to outline two rather different visions that I think are sort of on the table, and one of the things that I think they're going to do is to rearrange our ideological sensibility. So at the moment, we tend to think of politics as being polarized between the left and the right, and we seem to think we have a good sense of what that means. But I think a lot of developments that have been taking place all over the world, you know, whether we're talking about in terms of the relative disaffection of young people from voting altogether, to the fact that it's become very difficult for political parties to actually organize and mobilize along traditional lines. And so it looks like that there is a kind of rearrangement taking place with regard to how one wants to think about how we, however we are understood, is to go forward in the future. And I put "we" in scare quotes because I think there is an open question with regard to the future of humanity as to whether humanity as such is the most salient value category. Okay? So what I want to signal here in the first instance is the need to take seriously the developments that have been taking place in biological sciences over the past, since the time of Darwin and so forth, which in a way have served to kind of minimize our distinctiveness between humans and animals. And moreover, part of that general movement, I would say, but I think manifested more at a sort of political level, has been this idea that our fate as humans being animals are in a way sort of implicated in whatever future lies in store for the planet. So all of the ecological consciousness that has been very much part of the political horizons, especially among people, you know, younger people and people who think of themselves as progressive in some sense, has been about. And so what all of these trends tend to suggest is that there's a sense in which in the future, humans may matter, but not as humans as such. In other words, the sui generis character of humanity may matter less, but rather ourselves as living beings occupying a world with other living beings, you know, who are not so much different from each other. And so, you know, when one talks about things like species chauvinism or speciesism, you know, where, as it were, our sort of prejudice against other species and giving them a lower status is something comparable to racism as we normally understand it in social science. I'm talking about this kind of tendency becoming stronger in the future and leading to a different sort of conception of how, in fact, we install value in the human. Okay? And so that one might want to raise in this context that there are too many humans around, and that humans are crowding out other forms of life, that, you know, as forms of life equally have a right to be on the planet. Okay? So that's one vision of what I've talked about as humanity 2.0 on the table. I don't share this vision, okay? This is not my vision, But it does that. But it does put an enormous kind of burden of proof on people who want to justify and defend the distinctiveness of humanity, what it is that we are, in fact, defending. And here I want to put forward the opposing view, which is one that, in a sense, says, yes, you can grant that human beings are the product of evolutionary processes that have taken place over billions of years, and we are an offshoot of the primates and all this kind of stuff, and you can grant all that. But the question then becomes is, in terms of the sorts of qualities that we've been able to develop in that state as an upright ape, do those qualities necessarily in the future have to be carried forward in the simian form, in the animal form? Right? In other words, just as it was an accident from an evolutionary standpoint that we got here in the first place, it may equally be an accident that we need to remain in the biological bodies of our evolutionary ancestry. And this is where we start to talk about things like the possibility of merging with technology and cyborgs and uploading consciousness, especially if what you think is what's distinctive about the human being isn't our biological nature, but what we've been able to do with it, and if there's some more efficient, more powerful way of realizing it, then we should move to that platform. Right? In other words, we should be open to the possibility that a long-term horizon of the human condition is that in some sense we could merge with technology or migrate altogether into a technological platform that would end up increasing the qualities that from an evolutionary standpoint has enabled us to stand out from the animals. Okay? That's the other horizon. That other horizon, so let me give you names for both of these horizons that I'm talking about. The first horizon that I was talking about is what I would call post-humanism. Okay? And what post-humanism is about is basically displacing the human as the center of value in things. And so therefore, the human remains valuable, but only insofar as it is a category of life. So there's nothing, as it were, distinctive about the human that gives it value, but rather because humans are living, there's value in living. Okay, that's the post-human. That's how I would read that. But the other possibility, which is the one that I personally have been promoting, and is the one that I think is in a way truer to what historically was called humanism, right, actually sees sort of what the human condition is about, is actually accentuating and emphasizing what distinguishes us from the animals by whatever means it takes. Because those capacities that we've managed to develop over the course of evolutionary history have in fact enabled us to get enormous amount of comprehension and grasp and so forth of the way in which reality works. Now, I would submit to you that this kind of vision, which I think is nowadays normally associated with a very pro-technological vision, is ultimately a theological vision. Okay? It is about the possibility that humans may have begun as animals but will end up as gods. Okay? And some of you who follow some of the popular literature in evolutionary psychology and history and so forth will know that there's a book that's going to be coming out in the beginning of autumn called Homo Deus by Yuval Harari, an Israeli historian who published a book a few years ago called Sapiens, about the history of humanity, and this is kind of what he's trying to present as a kind of evolutionary history of the human species in terms of its distinctiveness. And the distinctiveness of the human being is the desire and the capacity to, as it were, abandon the biological substratum and move into this other kind of realm that will enable humans to live indefinitely and to proliferate across the cosmos and so forth. Now, the point that I want to make to you here is not that, we're obviously not in a position to decide this matter, and this is not, and obviously this is not an issue that is sort of on the front burner of the issues that face politics today, but I do think that in a sense these issues are kind of in the background, okay? So when people ask questions about what's the point of promoting technology, how much risk should we be able to absorb within society, right? Because if you're pro-technology, you basically have a very high risk threshold. You're willing to take a lot of risks. Whereas if you believe that we're really just animals at the end of the day, your risk threshold will be much lower and you'll be much more precautionary, right? So there are a lot of issues, as it were, on the front burner of politics today, where you can sort of see these kinds of alternative worldviews already on the horizon. And the point that I would want to raise to you here is that insofar as younger people from the younger generation have been disaffected from politics, it's largely because they're already thinking along these frames, okay? In other words, there's a sense in which whatever human beings are going to be, they're going to change. Their status is going to change somehow. They're not going to remain, as it were, in the way in which the state can administer to in an ordinary fashion. And we sort of see this in all kinds of ways in terms of disaffection with nation states and in terms of all the critiques that are around of just about everything in sight that ever had a legitimacy. But the point is, people are sort of imagining that the human condition will be moving in some alternative direction from the one we're in now. And I think it's already kind of bubbling up. And so one of the things that I would suggest, you know, from the standpoint of what sociologists can do, yep, I know, is that we can start thinking about not just critiquing this stuff, because critique is a dime a dozen, okay? Critique is incredibly easy to do of anything inside, really. Okay, and most academics and academic sociologists, that's what they're about. But I think the important thing is to think about what are the grounds of legitimacy for these alternative perspectives, right? In other words, these two perspectives that I have just presented to you are not perspectives that are merely the product of the time in which we live. These are perspectives that, in fact, are very much rooted in the human condition and how human beings have thought about themselves for centuries, okay? And the interesting question is, where do they get their legitimacy from, right? Where do we get legitimacy on the one hand from thinking human beings are natural? You have to take that seriously. Where does that come from? On the other hand, human beings are really gods in the making. Where does that come from? Because it seems to me it's going to be those two grounds of legitimation that will be the ones contesting for things in the future, and just critiquing what's on the table now, you know, that can make you a career in the short term, but it isn't necessarily going to be contributing to anything very substantial that this discipline might be doing in the future. And I'll stop here.
Thank you very much.